Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasha. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. If you've listened to radio, danced at a club, or played a recording during the past 50 years, you've enjoyed the rhythms and legendary drumming of Greg Errico as a founding member of the influential rock and funk group Sly and the Family Stone. Errico's innovative drum performances and use of the hi-hat and bass drum on recordings like Dance to the Music, I Want to Take You Higher, Everyday People, Thank You for Letting Me In, Hot Fun in the Summertime, and Stan, among many, many others, helped bring about fusion of rock, funk, and jazz. For this accomplishment alone, Greg would have deserved his 1993 induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the R&B Foundation Pioneer Award given to the group at the Apollo Theater in 2001. In the more than 40 years since Sly and the Family Stone broke up, Errico's performances have been sampled well over 1,000 times by various artists and bands. He continues playing and recording on some of rock and roll's most historic LPs and tours. Playing has always been my number one interest, Errico states, but writing and producing are also important. A complete musician has abilities and experiences in all areas. You explore your instrument from writing and producing. One area strengthens another. Greg's writing contributions have brought him number one position on world pop charts in 2014 for the song Timber, which was also honored at the 32nd annual ASCAP Pop Music Awards for being among the most performed ASCAP pop songs of 2014. Other than raising a family in the San Francisco Bay Area, Greg stays active performing the music of Sly and the Family Stone with various artists and is involved with Unity Music Foundation, for which he has produced several recordings featuring many world-class jazz artists such as the Count Basie Orchestra. Please welcome the legendary drummer for Sly and the Family Stone and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Class of 1993, Greg Errico, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Greg.
Ray, you did that so well.
Oh, thank you, man. I could have gone on and on, but, you know, I didn't want to overdo it.
It sounds like you've done that before.
A couple thousand times, I think.
All right. It's meant me laying on me.
So what do you got going on lately? What's in your life?
Well, you know, I keep busy. We just did I'm out, you know, doing performative music that I helped create and record so long ago.
Right.
Still, I'm blessed to be able to do it. Yeah, I mean, I was born in 48, so time does not stand still for me or anybody else, actually.
Yeah.
And so I'm feeling pretty good. Try to keep in shape so I can still play.
Right.
One thing does the other. You know, I keep shape so I can play, and playing keeps me in shape. So we can see. Last interesting thing was notably interesting thing was I did a show in San Francisco Great American Music Hall with Ivan Neville's Thumbs to Funk, featuring myself and David Garibaldi, drummer from Tower of Power.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Doing the Sly book and the song in the songbook from Tower of Power,
mm-hmm,
with the Tower of Power horn. So we just absolutely had a blast. And unfortunately, it was raining, just the horrible rain, and the show was running a little behind. All these people were heading. It was a good crowd, you know. People came out, and I was just making the point that they had to stand out in the rain because they wouldn't open the doors.
Oh, man.
Things were running behind, and they were gracious enough to put up with that, come in and have a good time, and we had a blast.
Oh, yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah,
I love Tower of Power. I saw them many a times. Who was the cat that used to spin around when he was blowing his horn? He was kind of dancing in the circle, you know.
Oh, that's probably Lenny.
Yeah.
who then went on to do Saturday Night Live. He's been the music director and on and off there, and he's still doing it.
I didn't know that. Yeah,
he was a band fan. Lenny Pickett.
Yeah, that was a kind of a signature move for the band, too, you know? You always wanted to see that guy.
they've always had, I mean, all the players, they've always had great players, top notch.
Oh, yeah.
But we all came up together back in the mid-60s. You know, they were in the East Bay, I was in San Francisco, and we used to, pop in and see each other at various places as we were grinding away, trying to make a living and trying to make it happen.
Well, you made it. It's hard to make a living at being a musician. It really is.
It is. Yeah. And she's probably even tougher today. I look back and I was just right place at the right time. I mean, I feel fortunate. It's tough and things have changed a lot. In media, radio, performance, I mean, productions have come up, great shows go on now worldwide, festivals and all that, but it's just it's a different animal.
Right.
Than it was when I was coming around, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of the great legends have a hard time getting record deals, and now they go on private labels because I guess there isn't any huge record labels anymore. There's not many anyway, just a few.
There's not many, no.
Yeah.
And it's different. But, it's funny because the internet allows one to be visible.
True.
If you could connect with an audience, you create a fan base, you get out there. But there's a million other people doing it too. So at the end of the day, it becomes the same game as far as, rising above, marketing, promoting, being visible and being heard. It was difficult then, and you had the music, the big record companies that you signed your life away to, and they would pour a lot of money into to make it happen. And if you connected, if you had good songs, performances, you connect with people, well, you became visible. It would happen. And it's kind of like the same thing today. There's independent artists doing that,
Right. Well, like you said, there are a lot of great musicians out there today, but they're not getting the exposure like they should, which is sad.
Well, yeah, it's hard, but you can. I mean, it happens, and it's difficult. Maybe in a different way than it was difficult back then. So at the end of the day, if you got the talent and you could connect with people,
right,
you got good songs, good strong songs, good performances, you will connect and you will create a fan base,
Right.
It's just, at the end of the day, it's hard work.
Yeah, you got a tour. You got a tour.
Yeah.
You got to play the clubs and, you got to get out there.
Yeah.
Now, you started out, I think, didn't you first start out in Freddie and the Stone Souls?
Mm-hmm. Sly's brother Freddie, we had a group.
Right.
For about a year before we started, Sly and the Family Stone.
So that's when you first, met Sly in that band?
Yeah, well, this was Freddie's brother.
Right.
Sly's brother, I'm sorry, Freddie. Sly's brother, we had the group, but Sly, everyone knew Sly because he was a radio disc jockey back then.
Yeah.
Like yourself, he had a great show. And back then there was no internet and all this other media outlet. I mean, there was just like a handful of radio stations and so if you had it going on, you were connecting with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And he just had a fantastic rhythm life personality. He's just seeing the news and the weather. and it was just very creative, and he played great records, So he was visible and really talented. So I was excited when we were going to do the band together, and I knew that it was going to be something special, and it ended up being such.
I talked to David Clayton Thomas recently. He got his break from just being on a show with a friend of his show in Boston, a radio station, and he didn't realize it was 50,000 watts. He just thought he was just going on there just talking and doing a show and whatever.
Yeah.
That's how he got his break too. From
Yeah. Well, the big stations were powerful back then.
Yeah.
And you know, again, there was no internet and no cable TV and all this different, you know, hundreds and hundreds of choices. So when you were on a big station, it's just like television was the same thing.
Yep.
I remember doing a television show the next day, our lives changed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally. And, you know, I did it with anticipation because it was the same place that, you know, I had seen the Beatles for the first time, and I seen Elvis Presley for the first time. And,
yeah.
And I knew it was powerful, and but having the experience was quite something, you know. It's like you're walking through the airport, and you know, the day before, and no one's noticing you. The next day, everyone's noticing you. It's like, hey, we were doing the same thing yesterday. But it's a powerful thing, you know. I'm making fun of it, but it's a powerful thing.
Did you guys lip sync during that show, or did you just play?
We played live.
You played live. Good. Awesome.
A couple times were the union thing, you know,
right.
It was, you had to, they went, you know, it was this thing with the engineers and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was different back then, you know, and a lot of people did what you call lip sync,
mm-hmm.
but, so sometimes we would just play live straight, you know, I mean, it was, you know, in the moment. And then sometimes we go in the day before and we go to the studio, we record like a medley of whatever, you know, what we wanted to do. So
right.
we had a live track and then they play that live track and we play with it and sing live to it.
Exactly.
So those were the two ways that,
that
we approached it back then. Yeah.
I guess you met Ed, of course. I talked to a lot of people that were on the show. And I get kind of mixed reactions. What did you think about Ed?
Oh, he was a funny guy. I mean,
yeah.
He introduced us once. We did it with Ed Sullivan Show three times.
Okay.
One of the times he introduced us as a comedy act. he introduced us as, you know, it was just like, I don't know, you know, I don't even know what to say about it. He did it with a straight face. I mean, no one noticed it. I mean, everything worked out as it was, but he introduced Ben as a comedy act. Like the hottest new comedy act. Just flying the family stones. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, he got it wrong a few times.
Yeah. I mean, he was an iconic figure. He didn't interplay much really with anybody. Just keep, you know, he got his script and, you know, and introduced people and a cordial hello after sometimes maybe a couple words.
Yeah.
Every once in a while he'd do a personal few words with people, but that was about it, you know. It was like the late night shows now where you sit down and eye to eye and you get involved, get into it, you know, conversation.
The thing that, you know, I give Ed a lot of credit because he brought so many great acts, you know, that nobody knew. But what makes me mad is when a lot of these talk show host guys, they bring the music acts and they don't do their due diligence, you know, they don't do any history.
Homework.
They don't do any homework.
That might have been the case here when he the comment or someone wrote, or yeah, it might have been just a mistake on his part. I don't know. Like I said, you know, I noticed that I've never had anybody say to me, actually, did you know that Ed Sullivan introduced you guys as a comedy act? So it wasn't like a heavy conscious thing. It was just something that, you know, it was obvious what was going on. It was a music act we played and that kind of, you know, shined brighter than any mistake that may have happened.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Yeah. He was something.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a question, and it's going around the internet. I don't know if you've ever answered this before. Life and Death in GNA.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, they said that was done by another band, but a lot of people think that was Sly and the Family Stone who actually sang it and wrote it. Is that, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, my thoughts are actual facts. We recorded that.
Right.
That was us doing a track.
Okay.
We didn't sing it. It was track, and he sang it, and she's, I'm sorry, yeah, forgive me, for
that's okay.
His name. This was a long time ago. They're talking over 50 years ago. And he since passed, actually a long time ago he passed away. He was a great singer, and it never really made, it did too much after that, unfortunately. Because he was good. He was kind of like an Otis Redding kind of cat. Big,
yeah.
Had a big voice, you know. But that was us. That's the track is the band.
It is the band. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, that answers that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to mention to everybody, there's, you know, about Sly and Family Stone. I just want, you know, Sly Stone, of course, was the leader, you know, multi-instrumentalist, of course. There was Freddie Stone, who's the guitarist. Freddie's now a pastor, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Got a church in Vallejo, California.
His sister and singer keyboard is Rose Stone, who the trumpeter, and Rose is still out there, right? She still performs. Of course, we just lost Cynthia Robinson. She was an incredible, very incredible musician.
We miss her a lot.
Yeah.
She was great. She was quite a personality and just a bright light on stage. Yeah.
I saw a lot of the interviews. It was you and Jerry and Cynthia doing a lot of interviews together. You're the drummer. Saxophonist is your cousin, right? Jerry Martini?
Yeah. We weren't real blood cousins.
Okay.
I mean, we were cousins, friends for over 50 years and all that, but we weren't really cousins. I don't know how that came about. But if you, you know, was actually to look under the, in between the pages, we're not real cousins.
Okay.
Like by family. But, virtual family, musical family.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, Larry Graham on bass.
Yeah.
That was the, you know, the classic lineup, I guess.
Yeah.
And you guys were incredible. You guys were incredible, man. And, you know, you were so ahead of your time, you know, because you, when you started all this, this was in the 60s, you know?
It was a wonderful experiment that Boston minimally turned into be a moving force in music. I wish it could have continued on.
It could have.
The music does. The songs do.
Yep.
Songs are as relevant today as when they were written.
They are.
And which is a testament to a good song. But unfortunately, you know, it wasn't to be as far as the original band.
Mm-hmm.
Staying at the future. This is just a small, very small handful. Handful of bands that were able to do that, and even though, you know, along the way the original members passed and such, but there are still bands out there that are still, you know, like Carlos, he represents what he did and what he's doing now, and all in between. Santana, you know, he's out there doing it at Grateful Dead, or, you know, they lost Jerry, of course, but I was in the Jerry Garcia band for about 10 years.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And he was a wonderful person, really fun to perform with and to be around. So it's, I mean, it's who else? Are the Who's out there, you know, two of the guys, did, you know, still perform and represent the spirit, the music of which they created.
Right.
But it's far and few between, you know.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of them are retiring, too.
Well, like I said, time to wait for it, buddy, you know. As years pass by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even today, you know, the younger generations, although, you know, the songs I know, like, 2 years ago, I was working with the Family Stone, we went down to Australia, and we had never been there back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, and we were playing these outdoor festivals. A lot of people, all age groups were there. You know, like over 100,000 people, wow, young, middle age, yep, and they all knew the songs like as if we were had been toured there back then. So again, it's just a testament to good songs, and you know, the young people today, they know the songs. They may not recognize Slime.
Exactly. Yep.
Oh, I'm not sure. And then if you say the title of the songs, oh, that's that group. Yeah, I know the song.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And I guess that just goes with, you know, not being present still,
mm-hmm,
and performing. You lose that identity, the namesake identity, but the songs still get played on the radio, they're in movies, mm-hmm, commercials, what have you. You know, so that they live on.
Exactly.
And
yep.
Represent you, you know, represent what you did.
Yeah. I wrote a book. It's called The Rockstar Chronicles. It's going to go into four series. That number one came out. It's over 50 interviews, you know, with the legends of rock. And I'm doing this so you guys can still be out there, you know, and kids can pick it up and read all about the greats, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, that period of time.
Yeah.
Ray was really a special time.
Yes,
maybe all the songs that were created and carved back then, recorded, still live into the future. And
yep.
So, again, it's a testament to a great song. You know, it was just a time, a period in time where there was that intense creativity and there was a lot of things changing and being,
yep,
said. You know, we're still fortunate to be part of it.
I'm a baby boomer, and I'm very proud of that time. I was a DJ back in the late 70s. I did top 40 radio, but I grew up in the 60s with all the best DJs in the world, and that's why I got into radio, is because of those guys, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, being, again, from San Francisco, late 60s,
right,
with Tom Donahue,
mm-hmm,
who was the godfather of FM radio format, AOR.
Right.
You know, Al Memorial, he's the guy that started it. Him and Bobby Mitchell was program director for a station called KYA. It was a big pop station back,
mm-hmm,
then.
Right.
And again, it was at that time period where there was only a couple of stations, and that was one of those stations where to get your record on, you broke nationwide.
Right.
Because
right,
they had affiliates in all the big markets across the country, right? So it was powerful entities. And yeah, I don't know. Do you know who Tom Donahue?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, so I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Get in the business. Yeah.
Those are, yeah.
Yeah.
I talked to Tommy James, and of course, that other side of the record industry, you know,
mm-hmm,
with the mafia and all that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that was another interesting part. But, you know, he says, you know, like Morris Levy, you know, from his record, like Roulette Records.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it wasn't for him, nobody would have known who Tommy James was, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it was a different world, like I said.
A different world altogether, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it true that the Black Panther Party demanded that you and Jerry and your manager got fired?
Well, I remember that the issue was brought up, that they had asked Sly to get, you know, yeah, to remove us from the band,
mm-hmm,
have an all-black band or whatever, and he just says, no way.
Yeah.
You know, he just, and it was not a big deal back then, but that subject has come up many times, I've been asked many times, so,
mm-hmm,
I guess it's been written about or whatever, and, but it was just kind of like a non-issue at the time.
Right, right.
I mean, Sly handled it, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that comes about is Larry Graham had an argument or a fight with Bubba Banks and Eddie Chin. And he's something about hiring a hitman to kill Sly. Was that true?
No, those are probably drug-induced rumors, you know. It was crazy then, you know, things got kind of chaotic, but I remember that rumor.
knows?
There's rumors, and then there's the reality, you know?
Yeah.
The reality is what you see.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, the internet, you get all kinds of, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just goes with the territory.
Right. I see that, I didn't realize this at the time. Bobby Womack actually replaced Graham at that time. Was that?
No.
No, that's not true.
Bobby Womack collaborated with Sly.
Okay.
But not as or in Sly and the Family Stone.
Right.
And the fellow that replaced Larry Graham was Rusty Allen.
Rusty Allen, yeah. He was young at the time. Yeah.
Young bass player, and I had left the group by that period, by that time. I left in 71.
71, yeah. Well, now, why did you leave? I know there was turmoil going on after you left, and so that's why Graham left as well. So you probably saw the writing on the wall, huh?
He left a year later.
Yeah.
You know, and, well, you know, things have changed, and again, you know, I guess, in the beginning, the music was the most important thing,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, you know, that probably changed to be where other things were more important, like drugs and stuff like that. And I think, had that been the case in the beginning, we would have never created the wonderful path that we carved. And so, you know, there's a place for everything, I guess, but... I think they got in the way, you know.
Right, right. It was just the timing was right, I guess. It's time to move on.
Yeah.
I think, in my opinion, I think Sly's swan song was "If You Want Me to Stay," because that was probably one of his last big hits. I think, right, back in '73.
Just about. Yeah.
That was a good song.
Great song. Yeah.
Great song.
I like playing that today still. You know?
Yeah. What was the last time you saw Sly?
Let's see. A couple years ago now, I think it's been. There was this convention that we did in Oakland a few years back. That was probably the last time I seen him.
How's he doing?
He's still all right. You know, he's kind of just grooving. His health is what I understand, is not tip-top.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, and he's just starting to get him, and, you know, but I think he's been, from what I hear, you know, he's just been coasting and doing his thing, you know. Unfortunately, you know, he hasn't been performing or anything for quite a while.
Yeah.
His voice has kind of failed, you know. And, so, again, the songs live on in the memories. Everyone gets to that point at some point in time.
You know, it's amazing, though, how many hits, you know, he wrote in that short period of time, you know? I mean, that's...
That was a quantum... How would you say it? The quantum... time period.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, all that songbook was mostly created in between. We started the group in December of '66.
Wow.
I left in '71. Larry left in '72.
Yep.
And then Sly did, you know, like you said, "If You Want Me to Stay."
Mm-hmm.
One of the last ones. It wasn't the last one. But by '75, he stopped touring.
Right.
That was it. And he did some collaborations with, you know, different people, Bobby Womack or
right.
Fire, I think, my brother Johnson, you know.
I'm friends with Bobby Womack's nephew, Binky.
Uh-huh.
He's a good guy. He's got music out there, but he's having a hard time getting discovered, you know, and he plays rock.
Yeah.
He plays rock and funk, you know. He's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't heard him. I have heard the name, but I haven't heard the band.
Yeah.
Group, you know.
Binky Womack.
Yeah.
Really good guy. You guys had, let's see, some of the albums, there's a riot going on. Wasn't that released on red vinyl not that long ago, right?
It could have been. I don't know. I mean,
re-release.
Original release, of course, was back you know, in 71.
Right.
And that even had, that came out after I left, but there was a few tracks that I had played on.
Uh-huh.
That we hadn't finished, and then, you know, Sly took them and finished them and did a couple new tunes, and that was Riot. If it's been re-released, yep. Actually, you know, a lot of those records have been released
right.
many times in different formats, CDs, you know, gold pressings, you know, you name it. And so I'm not surprised, red vinyl or what have you. It's great because vinyl is a wonderful, warm,
mm-hmm.
big sounding format for, that's how, you know, that's what we did. That was the default when we were doing it.
Right.
And then later on, it's good to see the young people rediscovering vinyl. And wow, they listened to it for the first time. They said, oh, is that what it's supposed to sound like? You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
I mean, not that digital's bad, it's just a different thing.
Not the
really,
same.
You know,
it's not the same.
Yeah, vinyl, yeah. Can't say nothing bad about it.
Yeah, even CDs were not the same. And they lied about CDs. They said they would never scratch. Bologna.
Yeah. they do. They scratch. They break.
Exactly.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, now, you know, it went vinyl cassette to CDs, and just now it's just,
yeah,
it's all celestial, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I just heard a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just seen a news thing. Someone, this is the other day, CD Baby.
Yeah. My book is on Book Baby, published by Book Baby.
mm-hmm. It's a book publishing. Internet publishing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They do a good job.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you were inducted in 1993 by one of the kings of funk, of course, George Clinton.
Yeah, I just spoke to him the other day.
Okay, how's he doing?
He's doing good. He's doing really good. It was great. I was supposed to, you know, I had heard he was coming to town here,
uh-huh.
and I had planned I was going to go see him, and then something came up. I had to go to L.A.
Right.
And so I actually arranged my flight so I could meet late that night, and I figured I'd go, and at least I know I'd catch him at soundcheck, and we could sit down and talk for a minute, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to see the show, but he, you know, he showed up, he was cool, doing good, he laid down a couple poems that he had in his head, and he was sharp, mm-hmm. it was witty, it was very cool. I enjoyed talking to him. Probably get with him again.
Yeah, there was a rumor that he was retiring too. Is that,
he's actually on his, retirement tour.
His first one.
Yeah, number one, right?
Yeah.
He seems to be enjoying himself, and so it's all good.
Yeah, I saw the Funkadelic back in, 73. It was Rare Earth, the Funkadelic, and the Ohio Players back in
mm-hmm.
70. Oh, yeah, what a show.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. You know how music brings us together. You know, it was only maybe three white guys in the whole audience out of, like 14,000 in Baltimore. And
wow.
No problems. We, you know, I was on this, up on a seat with, a black chick. We were dancing away and
mm-hmm.
music brings us together, man. You know, and
it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because that night that George was here, I had to go to LA. Because
right.
The next day I had an interview with, Amir Questlove, who is the director of a movie that will be called The Blackwood Stock.
Oh, wow.
And it's based on a show that we had did
uh-huh.
in August, or the end of July of 69. It was the Harlem Cultural Festival, it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Mount Morris Park. It was outdoors in New York City, up in Harlem.
Right.
And it was tens of thousands of people all from Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
So here again, you know, like you said, you can put this together. There's no color. I mean, Jerry and I were probably the only two white people there, other than
right.
maybe the crew from ABC who filmed it.
Right.
Whatever. It was just so. So it's interesting because I come to find out that this show actually went on for six weekends. 69, the summer of 69, mm-hmm. in Harlem. But there were many acts on it. Stevie Wonder, Last Night, I mean, a lot of acts.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. I thought it was just this one day, this day we performed. Actually, Sly and I both had the flu. We had fevers. We
were looking for one.
But we went on and the band delivered big time. We had to.
Yeah.
They came to they came to check it out, and we delivered. It was a great show. And so anyway, I guess that they're doing a movie on it.
Very cool.
And I'm not sure what all the discussion will be, but I get the impression something will be the fact that it was just overlooked,
mm-hmm.
maybe overshadowed by Woodstock when it went on within weeks of this event.
Yeah.
And the media overlooked it. It just never, people didn't even know about it. So they're bringing it to light, and I assume that there's some fantastic footage on there, of performances. And there's interviews with some of the people that, performed, like myself,
mm-hmm.
that were around still to interview. And so it sounds like an interesting one. And anyway, that's where I went that night. That's where I went down to LA to shoot that next day.
Yeah, we'll be looking out for that, I'll do the research and look and see when that's coming out.
There's been a press release on the fact that Bus Love is the director.
Mm-hmm.
He's been chosen. So this is his first wearing a director's hat. And so he's doing a good job. They filmed the interview, and they had a crew there, and great questions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in anticipation of seeing how this all comes out.
The 60s, a lot of people have a misconception about that. I grew up in D.C., and my dad had stores on F Street for years and since the early 60s. We went through the riots in 68. We saw what happened, and everything. But, it wasn't a black and white thing. I mean, if you were hip, you were cool, We got along fine.
Yeah,
as long as you weren't an idiot, white guys weren't idiots, you were, and like you said, the music bonded everybody together, it really did.
That's right. Well, music is powerful, beyond, there's no borders, beyond
right.
just racial considerations, as different ethnic groups, all
yep.
different countries, I think music was one of the things that, when the West went to the East,
mm-hmm.
like as far as China, Russia,
right.
it was music
that exactly.
broke. It wasn't politics or politicians that said, "Okay, let's get a bunch of people together." And
yep.
it was music that did it, and it did it.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely
yeah.
right. And you guys were the front runners in that. It was bands like you. It was Rare Earth, white guys on a Motown label.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Burdon, with War, mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. This was that was a time where there was a challenge to do that because there were great challenges that existed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnicity. Hope I said that right.
You did.
And there was a lot of problems in the country
yeah.
with regards to that.
Yeah.
So music's a powerful thing.
Music is powerful.
It single-handedly what broke those barriers down and said that you could do this.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly. All right. I got to talk about Woodstock a little bit. What was your impression of Woodstock?
My impression of Woodstock? Surrealistic. It was just amazing. One time, one of a kind event that was not, wasn't planned. I mean, it was a happening. It happened. It happened, regardless of people's planning or lack of planning. And it was a very cool thing. And I think the attempts to do, Woodstock 2 and Woodstock 3 were kind of silly things. And,
I agree.
They ended up failing, from what I understand. I didn't go to them. But that's what I understand. And it was just a really unique, special
Yeah, you, and you guys were incredible. I mean, you were voted like, you know, the best, you know, energetic act.
Yeah, again, we, you know, did our thing. We
Went
way in the wee hours of the morning. We're supposed to go on at 8 p.m. on Saturday evening.
Uh-huh.
Ended up going on 3 a.m. Sunday morning. And, which was quite the challenge, just, you know, just trying to be prepared and getting your adrenaline up for the show, and then having to wait another hour and another hour, and then the fact that this crowd that was there, it was draining at that time, and they had been there already a few days, rain, sun, you know, dust, heat, you name it, and they're done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were grappling with the reality of just having to grow up and do our show, you know, play music, and these people were just beat up and sleeping and tired. But at the end of the day, again, music being you bring it honestly,
yep,
and with passion, it could do powerful, wonderful things.
Yeah.
And all those people woke up, got into it, and joined in, and it ended up being just a fantastic experience.
Yeah, all I could hear is, I want to take you high, and the crowd yelling and screaming. It was great.
Yeah, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. They meant it.
They meant
it. Oh, yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to a lot of guys that were at Woodstock, and a lot of them, some left right away, but some hung around, like Paul Kattner. You know, I talked to him, you know, he passed away, but he's great. He was a great guy, but he stayed for the whole thing, and he said, I wanted to see Sly and the Family Stone.
Well, I hope he got through. A lot of the, you know, legal, the choice of staying was sometimes the transportation might have been out in, or sometimes people had other commitments, so they had to leave. So I guess he had the luxury of not having anything to do
right
soon after, so he decided to hang out at this event and just soak it all up.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
I would have. I think we left, early that morning. I remember the Who went on after us. The sun was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we left. Yeah, it was early Sunday morning. So I didn't get to see Hendrix even, because he came out in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But we had to take off. You know, we came in on the helicopters. You couldn't drive in.
Yep.
And then because of just cars parked on the highway and mud and what have you.
Did you know Jimmy?
We did some touring together. We toured after that in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And he actually asked me to do a band with him, because he said he was changing. He was going to do something new and different. And at the time he asked me, it was like at the peak of our career. And so I couldn't leave the band.
Right.
I mean, I fondly accepted his, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was thrilled by his offer, and I would love to do it, but again, I couldn't leave the band at that time. And so shortly after that, the band of Gypsies with Buddy.
Right, Buddy Miles. Right. All right, let me get this on record. You turned down Jimi Hendrix.
Well, you know, unwillingly, but I thought it was what I should do at the time, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, you did.
So we did. We were doing some touring in Europe.
Yep.
Furman Island, Germany. We did Isle of Wight,
mm-hmm,
Pop Festival. Yeah. There was some shows back there. And then, you know, fortunately, not too long after that, then he passed.
You were on the Carlos Santana Buddy Miles Live album, which is another one that sticks out in your mind, you know, especially the album cover. That was a great album, and you got to do them changes. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was fun. We had I got some Super 8 millimeter home movie of us, like, going up to the crater. Someone had we're in the station wagon. I remember there's this one scene where we're in a station wagon. This is me and Greg Rowley and Carlos.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Coke Escovedo. And someone threw, you know, like a package of firecrackers?
Right.
You know, like the string of them?
Yeah.
Someone threw a string in the window of the station wagon. It was cracked.
Oh, so, man.
It was in a car empty so fast. No one got hurt, fortunately. I mean, someone could have got hurt. But, yeah, it was just crazy times. We had fun. We had a lot of fun. That music was great. Big crowds. Everybody was just good spirit then, you know?
Yeah, I love Buddy Miles, and he's been coming up a lot on my show lately. I had Bobby Berge, mm-hmm. who grew up with him in Iowa, and mm-hmm. and you know, of course, we talked about Tommy Bolin and all kinds of stuff. But so many guys, you know, they knew Buddy, you know,
yeah,
Billy Cobham, Billy Cobham,
yeah.
Talked about Buddy, good friends, and he
good
played
vocalist
some,
too, great vocalist.
He played some guitar, Buddy played some guitar, yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Good guy. Yeah. And I saw on your website, you had, Cindy Blackman Santana.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the show. She's cool. I like
her.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Great drummer. And, she's phenomenal. I mean, you know, Carlos will work, he'll do a couple hours set. Then at the end of the set, the last thing that happens is she does a drum solo.
Right.
And she'll play for 20 minutes after a 2-hour set, you know. And, you know, this little gal, you know, must weigh 110 pounds. And, I mean, she you close your eyes and, you know, it's a big person playing, you know. She's fantastic. She's a great drummer.
Yeah. She was great with Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
Yeah, that band.
A lot of passion. So. She plays with a lot of passion.
Yep.
And knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Some other things you've done, you did Cracked Actor, Live Los Angeles 74. You work with Bowie?
Yeah, David Bowie. Wow. Was the Diamond Dogs tour.
Yeah.
Dougie Welch was on bass.
Uh-huh.
And fantastic band. Michael Garson, keyboard, Joe Flick, guitar.
Wow.
Luther Vandross singing background.
Man.
Vocals. David Sanborn on tenor sax.
Mm.
They were crazy. Good band. Yeah.
Wow.
And David Bowie was a unique individual.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Man, your resume is incredible. You were on Betty Davis's first album, too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Miles' ex-wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got quite a cult following, you know, for never having, like, quote-unquote hit record.
Right.
The consciousness of her music and the fan base worldwide just amazes me because it just continues. And she disappeared way back in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple documentaries and films done on her, one that just came out, actually. Yeah.
And then how about the Pitbull song, Timber? How come there were so many writing credits on that song?
You say that? How come there were so many writing credits?
Yeah, there was a lot of writing credits on that song, including yourself.
Because that song originally comes from a song called San Francisco Bay that I wrote and co-wrote with Lee Oscar, and I produced
right.
the record back in the early 70s, I think 74. And then later on, move forward into the future, Pitbull and Keisha, you know, did a collaboration and they took that song
mm-hmm.
and then they added, you know, their thing to it, and it ends up being 11 writers, Lee and I on it. And, I mean, I gotta say, whatever, it worked. I mean, that song, did like over 10 million units worldwide.
Wow.
Including streaming and everything. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
You
need to be songwriting, you know? There's so much more that you can do nowadays.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
we need you, man.
That we did a long time ago, and it came back in a wonderful way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. Something I don't understand, something about a scientific paper, with you got the highest degree at PageRank centralities or something like that, and what is that all about?
Well, you know, that's an internet thing, and I was pleasantly surprised to see it myself. I forgot how it was sent to me or how I became aware of it.
Right.
But I guess I don't remember. I remember addressing it for a minute when it came, and I might have put it up on my page or something like that. There's a link, maybe, and that's probably how you found it. Otherwise, I'm not even sure. I don't remember what it even addressed, what it said.
Well, you're in there. Is it the highest degree in PageRank centralities and the second highest? I don't even know how to pronounce that.
So it's the internet thing. It's like internet thing? Traffic, I guess.
For right? Musicians of all time.
Yeah, well, I'm turning red. You know, that's wonderful. I mean, who would, you know, it's kind of like in the mid-80s, you know, I had stopped touring for a while. I wasn't touring that much. And, and this guy who was a big fan of the groups developed a web page representing Sly and the Family Stone. I didn't even know what a computer was yet at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he actually befriended us and came out, visited, got me into computer and doing emails and all that stuff.
Right.
And I gotta say it was a powerful thing because it kind of reconnected me with my past even in the way that I was getting emails and people were reflecting, you know, which I would have never known this stuff. I mean, these people would have never been able to get a hold of me
right.
and express themselves and in the way that, you know, what the music meant to them, what it did, or my playing, got him playing, changed his life, and this, and all these different reflections, personal things that were inspiring to me to get back into it and get busy again.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did, you know. And so there is, the wonderful technology of the internet brings us and connects us and makes it a smaller world.
Yeah.
Puts us all together again. So it's kind of a cool thing, you know.
Does this mean you're going to be the next Bill Gates or something? Or
I don't think so. I don't think so. He's doing a good job.
I don't know. Musicians end up being pretty smart besides being musicians. Like Jeff Skunk Baxter, you know, he works with the military.
Yeah.
The defense system.
I know.
You know?
I heard that, I know about that. I find it very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, if you could bring something to the table.
Exactly.
That works for a good purpose, why not, you know?
Well, music is kind of like mathematics in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Greg, here's your final question, and I ask a lot of artists this question. I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, gee. Maybe I could go back and take that gig with Hendrix.
Yeah. And you turned him down once.
First thought that came to my mind, we're just talking about it. I don't know. I never sit around thinking about stuff like that.
How about replacing Ringo and the Beatles? Replacing Ringo and the Beatles? No, he's too slow for you. Not enough.
No, that would be quite the experience. I listen to the Beatles channel on Sirius XM often.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with the music, right?
Sure.
Great songs, again. Great songs. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have liked to see you in that Hendrix Power Trio. That would have been cool.
Yeah. No, we'll leave it at that, right?
Okay. Sounds good to me. Yeah.
All right.
Greg, anything else you need to promote or chat about? Did we cover just about everything, or...?
Oh, I'm good right now. I think I don't have anything necessarily on the top of my mind right now.
Okay.
And like I said, feel fortunate to be able to still go out and do it,
yeah.
And it feels
we want to see an album with you collaborating with a bunch of guys, all your friends. How's that?
That's highly possible.
Yeah. You got highly so many, possible. You got, you know so many people, it'd be, you know, be a great album.
Highly possible.
Yeah.
Keep it on the short list.
Okay, we'll follow up with you in the future.
All right.
Greg, thank you for being on the show, man, for all your time. I really appreciate it. And, you know, good luck, and, you know, anytime you want to be on the show to promote anything, let me know.
I will do, and thanks for having me, Ray. Enjoy it.
All right, Greg. Thanks again, man. All right.
All right, have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. For more information about Greg Errico, visit www.facebook.com/Greg Errico. Also, www.allmusic.com/artist/Greg Errico. To find out all of Greg Errico's credits, he has a tremendous, tremendous resume. And www.slystonemusic.com. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And, of course, my new book, finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook, or at bookbaby.com and or at amazon.com. Featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Get your copy now. And have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.